Welcome to 33 Tangents, a roundtable discussion covering a wide variety of topics from digital analytics to working remotely to current happenings in business and technology. Your hosts, Jason Thompson, John Moran, Jen Koons, and myself, Jim Driscoll, all live in different areas of the world, but work together in the same company. Our regular day-to-day conversations often go off in various directions, and the goal of this podcast is to share our ideas and find new ways to engage with others.
All right, we got Hilot back in the house.
Yeah, and you know what? As I was putting together the last episode, I realized I really didn't give you any kind of introduction. Yeah, we just kind of got started on the topic, and we were away. Mm-hmm. So
she's like Bono or Sting, or like it's just Hilot, and people are. She just shows up. People are expected to know. And not only does she just show up, I listened to the last episode today. She shows up and comes and takes over our show. Like,
seriously,
she didn't want any of the rest of us to talk.
I'm gonna try to slow down.
This is a conversation here. We're trying to, we're just hanging out. We're just talking. You can let us chime in every once in a while.
I'll try. I'll do my best. Fine. If you have something interesting to say, maybe, but otherwise I'm gonna just keep going.
Oh, I just can't with you today. All right, Jim, last time we talked about getting started, and I think Hilot was able to share some really great tips from her experience helping lots of big brands get their optimization practice off the ground. And I was going off on some tangents, and I think at one point in time you pulled me back and said, wait a minute, we have future episodes coming up as follow-up. So do you want to set the stage for us today?
Yep. This is the next part in the conversation we started the other day. And before we were talking about how do we get things off the ground? How do we get things moving? What I want to talk about today is, okay, once things are moving, what are the key components of a successful testing program, a successful testing and optimization program? So we've heard from clients and prospects alike how they get excited. Before we were talking about how they're excited about getting started and then they would run into issues. But now moving on, they're excited that they want to test certain things or try out some specific ideas they have around optimizing a site. But they just, they either never get around to it, or they have a testing program in place, but they're really only doing some of the more basic experience testing that we see. So once a testing program is up and running, what are the key components of making it successful? What needs to be done to ensure that it's advancing, it's becoming more sophisticated, that you don't get stuck in that rut of you're just continually testing, say, call to action buttons or things like that. You're doing maybe more of the advanced things. So that's really what I wanted to do there is talk about today. How do you prevent someone from falling into the set it and forget it mentality?
So I have kind of different parts to keeping a successful program going. But the first part being kind of the transformation of the terminology that's being used and the structure around the pieces of the program. So what I mean by that is, a lot of programs, a lot of testing programs start with a collection, kind of like a backlog of ideas that have been collected over time as people got excited about bringing on board a testing program. And as it's starting, a lot of the times it starts with that exciting part of, bringing to the table some list of ideas of things that people always wanted to test and creating this backlog list of test ideas. And the transformation that's really important here is to transform that backlog into a catalog of tests, meaning, and I was kind of alluding to it the in the previous podcast where we talked about, how to get a program going. I think that transformation behind the idea of, oh, we have a backlog of ideas. When are we going to get to this test or another? or, you know, how do we get our ideas, you know, prioritized? It's more about transforming it into a catalog of ideas. And that catalog is basically where you take the time to define the test plan. What exactly are you trying to achieve? What is the hypothesis? What is the objective, and how you're going to measure the success of the test, I think, is a key transformation from a line item in some Excel workbook that says, oh, we want to test this on the homepage, or we want to test this for, you know, these type of guests or others. Transforming that into a really fleshed out test plan is what turns it into a catalog now. So now you don't feel like you have like a bunch of tests that's just kind of sitting and their ideas, and some of them have been there for a long time. It's more of like, how do we pick out of this catalog in a prioritized manner? So I think that, you know, with a lot of the clients that I work with, I think that was a key transformation to, you know, just simply think of the catalog and start fleshing it out, getting mock-ups from the individuals that can help kind of flesh out the change in the experience, the difference in the experience, and working with the developers to start looking and prototyping what it's going to look like and what the logic, how it's going to work, and fleshing out that catalog. The other terminology that I like to use in a testing program is to create themes. So a lot of the times when you start testing, you think of different sections of the site. Okay, we want to test on the homepage. We want to test on the search results area. We want to in the checkout funnel, in the purchase funnel. And you think of it as areas of the site rather than themes of what we're trying to accomplish. So I think theming out kind of the testing roadmap really helps get momentum, because you can start seeing how it's not just about the areas, about different areas of the sites where that has the same theme. So I talked last time about, you know, a site that might be, you know, very e-commerce driven. That's kind of the core of the business model. But there's also value to lead gen, so that, you know, we can create loyalty and retention programs and so forth. So those are two different themes, probably led by two different kind of business units. And I think theming out the, you know, creating at least two or three themes to the testing program creates almost these parallel roadmaps to the optimization. And finally, you know, the audiences. So looking at the testing program by audience, not just kind of a, you know, testing everything for everyone that comes to the site. Really thinking about those audiences and creating some sort of path to mature it. And I can talk about it more later, but, you know, thinking about the path to mature, how we see audiences and who they are and how we start maybe personalizing the test experiences that we're deploying to those audiences.
And I would look at it from a tactical perspective. I'd add a couple other things into it. Maybe one other thing to think about that we've noticed is we talked a lot about ownership on the last episode. And I think that plays into this conversation as well, specifically for organizations that don't have a well-defined ownership group of optimization, analytics, testing. The default, when we're talking about analytics, the default tends to be, well, we don't have someone to own it, let's have IT own it. That's different from when we're talking about optimization. When we don't have clearly defined ownership, it tends to be owned by marketing. And what we see happen a lot is marketing has a backlog of tests. They have a lot of ideas that they want to run, and they sprint out of the gate with those ideas. And with most of the solutions that are on the market now, they're able to effectively do that through the WYSIWYG editors that are made available through most of the platforms that are on the market. However, at some point in time, they reach a level of maturity where they simply have run out of ideas. There's only so many different ways that you can pivot a headline. There's so many different button colors you can test. And at some point in time, you tend to outgrow the WYSIWYG editor. You want to do more advanced, complex testing, and you need technical resources to do it. And with a lot of companies, we've seen that be a real barrier to maturing their testing program, to the point that it oftentimes withers and sometimes sadly dies because they don't have the right resourcing. They've kind of run the gamut of tests they can run through the visual editor, and now what do we do? And it kind of gets swept under the rug and needs someone to come in and recharge. And this really comes down to two things we started touching on last time: having proper ownership of your program and having the right types of resources aligned to support the program.
Yeah, and that's a really good point that you're making about taking the time to think about what the visitor is actually seeing on the site. You'd be surprised, it's not totally surprising, because unless you slow down and think about it, you don't know for sure what they're seeing. And what I mean by that is, when you design a test, you typically think, okay, you know, it's an A-B test, there's two versions, half of them will see this, half of them will see that. But if you're not familiarizing yourself enough with the application and how the site works, you might not be thinking of, okay, how does it work for mobile when the responsiveness of the site is different? How does it work when somebody's logged in or not logged in? Will it look different? There's a lot of, in most cases, there's kind of localization kind of logic in the site that says, okay, if you're not in the US, you know, the site is different in this way. You know, we have to show additional legal things, or we have to structure, you know, the site differently. And also there's, you know, selection by the user. So if the user selects, you know, certain filter interactions, or if they're selecting a different language, things might look different for them. And how does that test that you're building really look to everyone? So, you know, because often when we do the analysis, we say, oh, you know, it did really well, or, oh, it totally bombed, and we don't know why. And a lot of the times, and even worse, is that, you know, one of the new test variations is really successful, but only in a certain view in certain scenarios. But because we didn't tease that out of the data and we're not aware of the differences in the interactions, we're not seeing that impact at all. It looks like there was no movement. So there's something to be said to kind of, you know, the exercise of the themes and the audiences to really separate, you know, what the test will be targeting, and really taking the time to consider who will see it differently, despite of what we designed, who will still not see what we have built and will be in this obscure, you know, other scenario that, that, you know, we think is in the test, but they're not going to actually see the test. So
It's a great point, and I also think speaks to the importance of some of those key roles you mentioned in our last episode around having an architect, having someone that kind of oversees the entire practice and looks at everything in totality. And unfortunately, for a lot of organizations, and this isn't specific to optimization, but in a lot of organizations, success is measured by movement. And in optimization, that oftentimes comes out like looking like how many tests do we run this quarter? How many concurrent tests are we running? And that is the measure of success of the testing program. And we're forgetting that it really isn't about the number of tests we're running. It isn't about the velocity of testing or the concurrent number of tests we're running. It's about the impact that we're having. Are we creating a better user experience? Are we increasing the key measures that are important to our business? Are we generating more leads? Are we generating more revenue? And oftentimes, organizations are running so many tests so that they can check off the box at the end of the quarter that we successfully ran X number of tests, that they're not taking into consideration what is the actual user experience. And a lot of times these tests collide. They create experiences that are unintended. And oftentimes they create results that are not understood. And while they're perhaps analyzed in isolation, they may look good. When you look at them in totality as a whole of everything your testing program is running, they very well could look poorly. So I think that is a great point you bring up. And again, speaks to the importance of having someone that really sees the big picture from a testing program.
So one of the common themes I'm picking up in our conversations, both just, you know, getting started as well as maintaining and maturing your testing and optimization process, is who is the primary owner of it? Who's the primary champion of it? And a couple times I've heard, you know, you want partnership with IT. You want their support as you change the UI. You maybe need their support in some of the configuration of the technology itself, but you don't want IT involved, or, you know, you do want IT involved, but you don't want IT to be the primary owner. Have you seen cases where IT has fought to be the owner of the testing and optimization program, even though it was clear that they probably weren't the best ones to own it? They were more, they should have played more of a supporting role.
I don't think I've seen it where they fought for it. I think in most cases, if the deployment of the testing tool starts with IT, and if they're kind of the closest into the intricacies of, you know, maybe the analytics platform or whatever, from an instrumentation perspective, they end up being the first kind of interaction point with a platform. And to be honest, you know, I've seen it more the other way around. You ask, like, where, you know, do we know examples where they fought to own it? It's actually the other way around. It's really a struggle, you know, because their role is already, you know, fully loaded in other components. It may be specifically for, you know, for dev or specifically for analytics instrumentation, and bringing the responsibility of vetting out test ideas and transforming the translation of what the test idea that came through, how it should be built within the tool, is a, you know, it's, you know, it's too much of a burden, I think, for the IT team without any, you know, any buffer, any program manager to help make that happen, or analysts, or someone that can help champion kind of the in-between communication. So most of the time, it's more about getting it enabled, and it's really difficult for them to carry it on by themselves. In cases that they do have interest and capacity to do it, I think it gets to a frustrating point still, because again, the translation layer is missing. So, you know, as you know, some business owners might ask for, oh, we want to test this and that, but they omit certain part of the logic, and, you know, you build a test on some assumptions, and then without, you know, fully understanding how it might impact the site, and then all of a sudden it's live, and now everybody's complaining, like, why when I click here this happened? Well, you kind of asked for that. So I think it's it gets the IT team into a frustration point, because they really do want that partnership where someone is pushing back and saying, well, you know, you haven't really thought about what it would look like for mobile. I can build it, but, you know, we're just going to waste a bunch of cycles. You know, if you think about it, it's going to conflict with something else. So, you know, I think that I've seen more of that rather than, you know, IT team saying, no, we really, really want to own this all the way through. So
It's an important topic to discuss, though, because it is one area where companies often fall down. And again, it comes back to ownership, and where companies don't have strong executive sponsorship of a optimization testing program, this is often where they fail. And it's not that teams necessarily want to have ownership from an ownership perspective, but teams often have their own set of things that they're tasked with doing. So from a IT perspective, their goals and what's important to them may be different from what's important to the UX team, which may be different to what is important to the marketing team, and is probably different than what is important to the compliance and legal team. And so where you have no executive sponsorship, you're kind of like a rudderless ship or ships, and you're all kind of going off in different directions here, because for IT, we're looking at things like, you know, good code and scalability and fast load times. And sometimes that conflicts with what marketing is trying to do. It's not an all or nothing where there's a winner and a loser. Someone has to step in and help these groups understand that testing is a extremely complicated component of what we do as a business, and it takes all of these groups to make it work. If you think about all of the different types of skill sets needed to make an optimization program go, it spans so many different business units, and not one can pull all their weight in one direction. So this often begs for someone to elevate above that conversation and help those groups see that what we're trying to do is balance all of their needs, all of their desires, to come up with an agreed upon solution and outcome that is best for the business. And when that executive sponsorship is missing, you end up in a tug of war, where groups are fighting and saying, no, our perspective from IT is the most important, so we're doing it this way. And marketing comes in and throws some weight around and says, no, our perspective is more important. And all they're doing is tugging back and forth and not getting anywhere.
Have you ever run into a situation where you had trouble getting buy-in from any of those groups? Because, you know, whether it's IT or, you know, let's assume that this lives primarily with marketing, you're having executive sponsorship, you know, not having buy-in from everybody can obviously cripple any kind of testing program that you're trying to mature. You know, what experience have you had with clients, or even just talking with prospects, where they can't get that kind of support and buy-in?
I think the most that I've experienced was the challenge of not getting just the buy-in to get the practice going. Purely, you know, the inability to get, you know, the resources or whatnot to get a testing program going to begin with. Once it's going, you know, I'm trying to think of examples where we got pushback, or people, you know, within certain units of the business kind of clamming up and not wanting to work and not wanting to do testing. But I think for the most part, it's just been kind of that starting point, just getting the business to say, yes, we value the outcome of testing and optimization within our organization. And here we're assigning at least one or two resources that can make that happen. It's not, you know, that's the challenge. Not asking people within their role to also somehow do some tests, but actually saying, you know, here's a testing program and we're going to allow it to run without interruption. That has been the most kind of like the biggest milestone to get anything going.
Yeah. And for me, I think it comes down to setting proper expectations. Testing is important to have, as I talked about, a wide range of business units and groups and people involved in order to make it successful. But not everybody operates with the same set of expectations. And that's where a lot of organizations fail, is they don't set that expectation properly, and everyone thinks it's their responsibility to drive the testing roadmap, to define what the test is. And while everyone should have the opportunity to have their ideas heard, ultimately, you need to set the expectations of why we need IT involved, why we need marketing involved, why we want UX involved, why we, you know, need legal involved, and set the expectations accordingly. Again, if not, then we just end up in this big, you know, playground fight where everybody's trying to fight for ownership. And that's not really what we're looking to get as an outcome from the conversation. And so I think, you know, setting those expectations up front is critical. And that takes one of two things. It takes a very strong, proven personality who is running your optimization practice to come in and set that expectation. Most companies don't have that level of kind of executive ownership of their program. And so that's where having an executive sponsor is critical. So if you have someone that's very strong and can set that and is owning your optimization program, great. Let them run with it. If not, then you absolutely have to have executive sponsorship and have that visible. Your executive sponsor needs to come in and set the expectation throughout the organization that this is what this program means to us, and this is how we're expecting you to participate.
So So we talked about kind of having the executive sponsorship and kind of having the resources. And I think one of the next things that kind of keeps a momentum going in a program is to have a cadence for how we share what is going on within the program. And there's a few parts to that. One is kind of the obvious one, sharing the status and the test results, right? But I'd like to separate those out because a lot of the time, you know, you might have, you know, a weekly touch point with the different folks within the organization to kind of share test results and to share the status. But they both deserve kind of their own focus. The status of where tests are and the prioritization of the catalog is an exercise that, you know, needs to happen within the discussion. And is often kind of pushed aside and end up, you know, taking tests, you know, according to whoever, you know, most recently kind of voiced that they want to push for a test. So, you know, to ramp up a really good program, you want to keep a few kind of swim lanes of tests or a few themes going in your catalog and constantly prioritize and select tests to onboard into, you know, and to start testing so that you don't forget one huge part of the business in the optimization exercise. So I think kind of having like a touch point to definitely share the status of what's being built, what's in the catalog, what just got injected into the catalog that maybe deserves some attention, and how do we prioritize is a good part of the program that must happen. And like I said, the obvious part of the program that for sure happens is the test results. And the test results, you know, it's tempting to think like that every test results is hopefully going to have something great. Like we had a winner, we had, you know, we had something great happen here. But I think if you approach it, regardless of if the alternate variation or the new experience won or lost, if you take it as a story of why it happened and you always provide not just like the conversion metric, but you know, a little bit more of a story of why we believe it happened, it completely connects in that same discussion of the test results into a decision of what to do now. And it creates the discipline of saying, once we reach statistical significance, we're going to stop the test and we're going to decide one way or another. It's not one of those things that, oh, let's just keep it going and see how it goes. You know, you have to create that discipline. I'm going to share results, good or bad. I'm going to try to dig up why. I'm going to try to pull up other pieces of slices of the analysis of the user behavior to understand why this happened, as surprising as it might be. And then we're going to make a decision. And the decision is going to be one of two things. And that's kind of important because you think like, oh, a decision is like if it won, obviously we adopt the winner. But that's not always the case in terms of execution. So a lot of the times, if it's a big change or if it's a change that requires something to be adopted onto the site, it will take time for the dev team or whatnot to actually build, or the content team to build it onto the site. So the decision has to be made, you know, are we going to continue running one of the variations 100% out of the testing platform and continue to iterate and perfect the experience? Or are we going to run it, you know, out of the testing program until, you know, and push for the development team to adopt it onto the site? And I feel like that's a key component of sharing test results, and that decision is typically missing. You know, you share the results, everybody's like, oh, great, you know, can you share the deck after the meeting? And then that's great, and everybody likes it, but you know, the discipline of actually making a decision of like, okay, what are we going to do about it? You know, how are we going to realize the opportunity that won here? And how do we adopt it in the best possible way as soon as possible? So that exercise is really important. And I think finally, I would just say, and this is something that has to be kind of a little bit more structured, but having some sort of executive exposure within the organization. So, you know, a lot of the times tests happen and not everyone can make it to like a weekly touch point. So not everyone can make it to the point where you're sharing results. And I think that having some sort of show and tell about the program, the testing program, and what has been accomplished, even if it has to be just on a quarterly basis, is great because it creates this excitement like, wow, I didn't know we were doing this. You know, I have some other folks that would like to do testing in another section of the business or whatnot. And it creates momentum that explodes from there. So I think that's an opportunity, kind of a low-hanging fruit that is usually missed.
I know a lot of my questions are kind of around resistance to like a lot of these suggestions or your recommendations. And the reason that they're coming from that perspective is it'd be so easy. Like every time you come into a situation, the client just takes all of your suggestions and just runs with it. Right. It would make our job so much easier to the mm-hmm. point where we weren't needed. So that's why I'm kind of coming from the perspective of, well, what about trouble with this or with that? So I kind of want to hone in on discipline and we can start to wrap up here. But you know, have you ever seen a situation where you're coming to a situation because you've mentioned discipline multiple times, you know, seen a situation where the client is what's the word to use? Just loosey-goosey with things and are not very keen on discipline. Like, oh, well, this is just, they almost treat it like a pet project. Oh, we just want to see what happens. Right. You know, have you seen something like that when you try to bring in the idea of discipline? Let's organize, let's really be structured mm-hmm. here. You know, have you gotten resistance to that?
Yeah. And, actually, it happens quite often where it manifests in a way that folks will say, well, you know, we're looking to increase interaction with this area or widget of the site without any discipline to ask, well, let's also check that it didn't hurt revenue, that it didn't hurt conversion, that it didn't mm-hmm. have a larger impact to something more important to the business or more core to the business. And I think, you know, the way that I see to, you know, educate and elevate the program and create that discipline is to always bring in the one, you know, critical metric to the business. So obviously, if you're e-commerce and you're selling something online, no matter how much you increase click rate on something or another or download of something or another, if that change is going to hurt revenue, then it must be looked at that way. Yeah, you know, there's one metric that no matter what has to be important to the business. And the discipline in the testing program is almost like bringing all of those test success metrics that came up and reminding everybody that really there's one, you know, and it's a really hard concept to come to terms with because a lot of the times, you know, you create something on the product page or the homepage that creates additional engagement, but it makes no difference to purchase behavior, to return behavior, to elevating the experience for the user. It just creates superficial interaction. And it's hard not to, you know, it's hard to say, well, don't get too excited. You know, you don't want to be like the Debbie Downer and be like, well, it didn't do anything. You know, you kind of want to say, okay, how can I help this program to kind of to move the needle more, to make a difference? And you have to think creatively, but always use the same metric, almost like getting people used to every time they see results, like where they start asking for it. Well, how did it impact purchases? You know, something that they may have not asked earlier in the program, but after you get them used to every time you show results, you also show how it impacts revenue or whatnot. They start asking for it. So that's kind of how the discipline corrects corrects like this attitude where, oh, we just want to test like unimportant things or things that might create a little bit of impact, and it challenges us to come up with better hypotheses. So I think I would say that it's less about pushback and it's more about the onus as the person doing the analysis to come up with a better story, not just to say, oh, it didn't make a difference. Like, why didn't it? Why was it superficial engagement? Why? You know, help me understand how I can do something else next time to make a difference, you know? And I think we often forget that we are supposed to create that behavior. We're not supposed to just analyze the result and spit them out. So.
Yeah, that also speaks to the importance of making sure that your teams are aligned with what the company's goals are. And that seems like a no-brainer, but it often doesn't happen. In fact, I'll talk about a real-world scenario where that we saw this play out. So when Hila and I were running analytics and optimization on the client side, we worked for an online dating site. And one of the tests that we ran was testing landing pages aimed at creating new members. So registering, we were a reg to sub model. So the landing pages were focused on creating new members. As part of the analysis that we did, we also looked at downstream behavior as far as how healthy were those new members? Were they growing our customer lifetime value or were they decreasing it? And for this specific test, we found that the winner was driving a tremendous amount of new registrations on the site, but was doing considerable harm to the lifetime value of our customers. And when we presented to marketing, they almost brushed it off like they didn't care, because they were asked to drive traffic to landing pages first and secondarily drive new registrations. They didn't care what happened after that point. And that is extremely harmful to not only the testing program, but also the business as a whole. And so from running a testing program, as Hila mentioned, it's critically important that, and we talked about this last time, a lot of the difficulties in running a program is political, is managing expectations. And so helping to deliver messages that may not go over well and helping get people on board, even though it may not directly align with what they're being asked to do, is important. But more importantly, you have to have, I mean, I'm probably beating a dead horse here with executive buy-in. You have to, from an executive level, make sure that your teams are all aligned on the goal. Because if marketing's goal is to drive traffic to landing pages, but the company's goal is to drive revenue, those aren't necessarily aligned. You don't necessarily correlate those two together. And oftentimes that results in, you know, programs that are not well run, tests that may look successful, but ultimately are harmful to the business.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So I really don't necessarily have a question to wrap things up, but you know, we're kind of reaching our time. So really just wanted to put it out there, like any kind of final thoughts for, you know, really maturing and advancing a testing program once you have it up and running?
I think creating that consistent touch point cadence with others in the organization is a big key to getting it going and keeping it going. Doing it alone is in isolation is never fruitful, because it has to be attached to the impact and how we adopt these opportunities onto, you know, the site or onto the business decisions that are being made. So just constantly working with the stakeholders and other team members is kind of a big deal by whatever structure you could put into place. So if it's extremely disciplined and you have the structure and you have the theme and the roadmap and the catalog and everything, that's great. And you can do that over time. But even just if it's just, you know, sharing results once a week and making a decision and you're starting with that and, you know, starting with an intake process for test ideas and you're starting just with that, you know, that's good enough to get a conversation started with other folks within the organization to get things going and to create a solid foundation for the tests that are going to go live and what we're going to do about them.
For me, it's leadership. It's one thing to go out and buy a testing platform to hire people to run it. But if you've taken anything away from this conversation, it's that running an optimization practice is extremely complex, and there are a lot of hurdles to overcome. There's a lot of politics that have to be played, and investing in a strong leader that can drive that program is critical. Otherwise, I fear that any results that you'll get out of your program ultimately will be underwhelming.
And I would say that one thing not to do is to start a program just because you have a testing tool. Just because, you know, a testing tool was purchased or somebody enabled it and turned it on, so to speak, doesn't mean that it's the go-ahead and it's a good foundation to get started. It has to come from a place that, you know, there's a desire to optimize the user experience and to understand it and to actually take action from the results. And anything doing it prematurely is just going to be detrimental to any starting point in the future, where you want to create that foundation, but now there's proof that it didn't work before. So starting it prematurely could be damaging to the future of any kind of solid testing program that could happen within an organization. So don't jump into it if it's not ready. It's really hard because, you know, it sounds so fun,
it's the new toy, right? Yeah, we got to use the new toy.
And then, you know, it's just, it works against you at the end. So many companies go through that where they look at, oh, you know, we did deploy a few tests, but there was no impact. For some reason, it didn't make a difference. So I don't know if we're ready to invest now in a full program, in a full resource, set of resources. And it really damaged kind of the first view of what an optimization program can really do to the business, for the business.
I mean, this was another great conversation. The time flew again this week. Every time I look up, you know, a lot more time flew by than it felt. So, you know, Hila, you know, it's great to have you join us again. We'll find some more topics for you to you know, come back on for, you know, not just testing and optimization, you know, cooking up a few other ideas for some conversations.
Great conversation. And I think, as I mentioned last time, Hila's a natural, so we'll have to find some other topics where she could join us. So thanks for jumping on, and thanks everybody for listening. Subscribe, like, share, help us spread the word.
That's great. Thanks for having me.
Yep, you're welcome. Yeah, thanks for coming on. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up for this week, and we'll talk to everybody later. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to reach us, you can do so by emailing podcast@33sticks.com or on the web at www.33sticks.com. The 33 Tangents podcast is a production of 33 Sticks.